I'm continuing in my series of history geek sermons, and I want to tell you all to mark your calendars for March 4th when Reverend Dr. Susan Ritchie will be with us, who is my guru of UU history, and will be sharing with us really a delightful sermon and then a forum after the service. So make sure to plan to be here on March 4th. I wanted to bring some historic voices into my sermon today, so I've recruited a couple of excellent actors to play various roles. So I want to introduce you to them now. Playing the role of Reverend Thomas Starr King will be the Reverend Dr. Roger Jones. And playing the role of the Unitarian minister Theodore Parker, a San Francisco congregant in 1860, journalist Gil Troy in 2017, Senator Hiram Johnson, and biographer Arnold Compton will be one man, Jim Eastman. Last year, my spouse Nancy and I went on a tourist day in San Francisco, including a tour on one of those double-decker open-air buses that you sit up on the top. Cruising through Golden Gate Park, the tour guide pointed out the statue of Thomas Starr King. Nancy and I cheered enthusiastically. The tour guide was amazed. He said, "No one has ever cheered for that statue before." I told him I was a Unitarian Universalist minister and I was proud of my heritage. He was even more amazed, likely thinking that UU ministers were a thing of the past. But after the tour, I realized that despite my enthusiastic cheering, and even though I had attended a seminary called Starr King, I didn't really know that much about him or his place in history. I did know that he was both a Unitarian and a Universalist minister. I knew that he had been a minister of the San Francisco Church and that he had died young. I also knew that in the mid-20th century, he was voted, the California legislator voted that his statue should represent California at the Capitol. But then, in 2009, his statue was replaced with one of Ronald Reagan. And Starr King was brought back to the Capitol grounds here in Sacramento. So I wanted to learn more. And today, I want to share with you what I've learned. So first, let's talk about Starr King, the man. His father had been a shoemaker who became a Universalist minister. Now, the ministry was open to his father because Universalists, unlike the Unitarians, did not require clergy to be college educated. These working-class Universalist roots were a part of what shaped Starr King and the choices he made in his life. While his father was serving a congregation in Charleston, Massachusetts, he died when Starr King was 15. The son then went to work as a clerk in a naval yard to support his mother and five siblings. This was the presumed end of his aspirations to college and a professional career. But it did not mean the end of his education. Because he was in near Boston and Harvard, he attended lectures at night and read voraciously. He became acquainted with and mentored by several prominent Unitarian and Universalist ministers and scholars who saw his brilliance. But his life changed profoundly by the grace of one of his mentors, the Unitarian minister Theodore Parker. When Parker could not accept an offer to preach, he recommended Starr King.
"This young man is not a regularly ordained preacher, but he has the grace of God in his heart and the gift of tongues. He is a rare, sweet spirit, and I know that after you have met with him, you will thank me for sending him to you."
This one sermon led to other invitations and ultimately a call to serve the congregation in Charleston, Massachusetts, where his father has served. He was just shy of 22 years old. Soon his reputation grew, and both Unitarian and Universalist congregations were interested in calling him. Now, Starke King was quite aware that he did not have the typical educational path for most Unitarian ministers. He did not go to Harvard, and in fact, he described himself as a graduate of the Charleston Naval Shipyard. When the Unitarian Church of New York offered him their pulpit if he agreed to attend Harvard for 1 year, he turned them down. But apparently, he didn't need to attend Harvard because 2 years later, Harvard awarded him an honorary degree. Eventually, he settled at the Hollis Street Church in Boston, a prestigious pulpit, but a congregation that had been pulled apart by anti-slavery and temperance issues. The pay at the church was low, and to support his family as well as his mother and siblings, he became active and popular on the Lyceum lecture circuit. But all this work wore him out. For Starke King, his strong intellect, big heart, and bright spirit were not matched by his physical health. Biographer Arnold Compton described him as a small, slender man, frail in appearance. And poor health would plague Starke King for his whole life. So why did he come to California? Many prestigious churches were interested in him, and he rejected them all because he was worried that too much would be expected of him. Biographer Arliss Unger describes his decision this way. His health was failing, and he felt he could no longer keep up the pace. After months of consideration, he took a leave of absence from the Hollis Street Church and left Boston for San Francisco, hoping perhaps for better weather, for a location which, by his remoteness, would relieve the temptation to lecture so much, we'll see how that turns out, and for a place where he could be somebody.
I do desire to be in a position where my labor would be of greater worth to the general cause than it can be in Boston.
He hoped he would not be looked down upon because he had no earned academic degree. Remarking on elitism and the parochialism of Boston, King said,
I do think we are unfaithful in huddling so closely around the cozy stove of civilization in this blessed Boston. And I, for one, am ready to go out into the cold and see if I am good for anything.
Now, before I share with you his role in California history, I need to set some context. Before I did the research for this sermon, I assumed that California had no significant role in the Civil War. Little did I know how important California was, and the role that Starke King played. Now, when Starke King arrived in California in 1860, it was barely a state. It had a fragmented government, multiple warring political parties, no railroad from the East Coast to the West, no telegraph, and was poorly connected to the East and the national government. It took 111 days for the West Coast to know that William Henry Harrison, the president, had died. Many of the immigrants to California were from slave states and had strong allegiance to the Confederacy. At the time that Starke King arrived, the governor and most members of the California Legislature were pro-Confederacy Southern Democrats. The only senator who supported the anti-slavery Free Soil movement had been killed in a duel the year before. And on the 4th of July in 1861, it was the Confederate flag that flew over the plaza in Los Angeles. During the time leading up to the war, there were four competing ideologies about the role of California in the conflict: remain neutral, support the Confederacy, support the Union, or form an independent republic. Any choice other than supporting the Union would have been disastrous for the United States, primarily because California had lots of money. Whatever side of the conflict that got access to that money would have had a big advantage. In fact, for the federal government, the gold that flowed to the eastern banks provided the financial banking to fund the federal troops. So into this melee arrives Thomas Starr King by ship from Boston. The San Francisco Unitarian Church only knew King by his reputation when they called him. No one from the church had ever seen him. And let me just say that he was not visually impressive. That's his picture on the front of the Order of Service. One member of the congregation wrote a letter home describing King's first sermon at the church.
The first feeling with many on seeing Mr. King was disappointment. He was so very diminutive, looked so young, and was so very different in outward appearance from what we expected. The crowd went to hear him out of curiosity, expecting never to go again, thinking perhaps to leave before the service was over. But when he began, there was no restlessness. His voice charmed them, and before he finished, they knew they had a great man before them.
Once established in San Francisco, King put his skills to good use in both the church and the state. Despite his intentions to limit his lecturing, he was drawn into the challenge of the time and became a voice for the Union, arousing audiences with his lectures on patriotism. Here he describes his lectures to a friend.
Such stillness, and then such laughter. Such applause, and then such ominous quiet when I gave them a free soil touch. I pledged California to a northern republic and to a flag that should have no treacherous threads of cotton in its warp. And the audience came down to thunder.
His words still have power for us today. Writing in the Daily Beast, September 2017, Gil Troy said this of Starr King's call to patriotism.
Amid America's ugly brawl over slavery, King never let his patriotism turn harsh, defensive, pinched, or xenophobic. His patriotism was lyrical, expansive, idealistic, charitable, and redemptive. Just 10 years ago, Ronald Reagan's statue replaced King's in the Capitol's National Statuary Hall. In this age of monumental musical chairs, let's move that marbleized figure of this big-hearted patriot into Donald Trump's Oval Office immediately.
Here is a sample of a patriotic speech by Starr King.
Patriotism is a constructive quality, quickening the intellect by its love of country to zealous ambition to improve it and raise it higher. It will tell a land of its faults, as a friend will counsel a companion, and if occasion requires, an indignation will flame out of its love. True patriotism, which labors to keep a nation faithful to its mission, cannot be satisfied unless the ideas of human worth and privilege that awakened and supported our political struggle ripen and produce their finest spiritual fruit.
Starr King exerted his influence in three main ways: engagement in the political scene by vigorously supporting anti-slavery candidates, lecturing all over the West in support of the Union, and raising money for the Sanitary Commission. These efforts resulted in California staying in the Union and making significant contributions to the war effort. Through his sermons, lectures, and political efforts, Starr King had accumulated significant influence, and he used this influence to raise funds for the U.S. Sanitary Commission, the precursor of the American Red Cross. The Sanitary Commission was run by Henry Bellows, a Unitarian minister in New York, and a friend of Starr King's. The U.S. government at the time had very few ways to raise funds and had limited resources to support the care of injured soldiers. Of the $5 million raised by all of the states in the Union, California contributed 25%, largely through the efforts of Star King.
Thus far, we have poured out no blood on the soil soaked with the loyal tide. Give, give, I pray you, that there are no enemies in the hospital. There are no enemies in the grave. Shall history say that electric California alone was laggard? Shall it be said that a rich, generous California was the only state whose blood did not bond in union and sympathy with her loyal sisters?
Star King even managed to raise $20,000 from flood-ravaged Sacramento. He remarked,
"It is a most honorable and really to me an amazing subscription. The movement for its collection was made after a lecture of mine there, and I feel more proud of it than anything that has been done in the state."
Star King lived 4 remarkable years in California before he died of diphtheria and pneumonia in 1864. He was 39 years old. Flags in San Francisco flew at half mast. State government offices closed. The legislature took a 3-day recess to mourn. Memorial cannons boomed across Union Square in San Francisco as his body lay wrapped in the American flag at the altar of his church. At the dedication of his statue in the U.S. Capitol in 1931, Senator Hiram Johnson said,
"Thomas Starr King, at the beginning of the Civil War, found the people of his adopted state uncertain as to their future course. What doubtless purpose and high enthusiasm he entered the momentous struggle there, and by his matchless eloquence and indefatigable labors, contributed in great measure to the maintain California as a member of the Federal Union."
There is so much more about his life that I want to share with you that doesn't fit on a Sunday morning. I could have told you about his love of Yosemite and how his articles in a Boston newspaper helped people on the East Coast appreciate its beauty. I could have told you about his anti-racist efforts and his outreach to the African-American community in California. I could have told you about his legendary sense of humor and his commitment to art and culture in California. But that is for another time. What is our takeaway from this story? I chose to bring this sermon to you partly because I wanted you to be aware of this great Unitarian and Universalist hero. I wanted you to appreciate his role in California history. But I also believe that the stories of our heroes are most powerful when we can relate to them as people and be inspired to possibility in our own lives. Star King was given many gifts: his personal magnetism, his intellect, his oratory skills. At the same time, he was small of stature, not formally educated, and suffered ill health most of his life. He could have stayed at the East Coast and held a nice pastorate and likely lived a longer life. But he chose to take the risky route by coming to California, and he did not sit idly by when called to serve his adopted state and country. His story can help us to see how we create the trajectory of our own lives by the choices that we make. He lived a life of courage and commitment. Star King had gifts that moved crowds, but much of his power came from his authenticity and compassion. We will give biographer Arnold Compton the last word on Thomas Star King.
"Human beings were the breath of life to him. Perhaps here is the secret of his personal magnetism. The legend shows us a hero whom people worshiped. The man had infinite capacity to give and receive human love. He was direct and honest in a kindly way. He drove himself to give to life fully as well as to receive because he felt that his years would be few."
We are blessed by his efforts and his gifts. May his life be an inspiration to us in these days of turmoil. And may we be called to bring our gifts to the service of the world. Blessed be.